Hello and welcome to this Microsoft TechNet session on deploying IPsec with Windows Vista. My name is Sunny Brock. Windows Vista is designed for better network performance and security. Windows Vista includes a new implementation of the TCP/IP protocol suite, known as the Next Generation TCP/IP Stack. The new stack has been designed to integrate with Windows' filtering platform and includes native IPv6 support. Today, we'll talk about how these innovations will help secure the network by enabling new features to filter network traffic and prevent unwanted forwarding. Windows Firewall has new features based on the Windows filtering platform. There is a new rules system with many scenarios already defined in an easy-to-use interface. The platform detects and identifies networks so that different rules can be applied depending on where a computer is connected. For example, a laptop could have different rules defined for the office, the home network, and public wireless networks. Windows Vista helps secure connections with tightly integrated Internet Protocol Security. Internet Protocol Security, IPsec, is a framework of open standards for ensuring private, secure communications over Internet Protocol, IP, networks through the use of cryptographic security services. Vista implements simplified IPsec to improve security and interoperability in mixed networking environments. New management features in group policy and enhanced command line interface tools give greater control over connections. As we go through today's session, you will hear various Microsoft acronyms and terminology. While we will explain all new terms related to today's session, there are some general terms from the industry or other versions of Microsoft products we may not spend time on. To help you out, we have listed out the areas that it may be helpful to be familiar with either prior to this session or to reference afterwards. Windows Vista is the newest release of the Windows Client Operating System, so a basic understanding of how Windows XP Windows Network Security works would be helpful as we discuss the new features of Windows Vista. Many of the features of Windows Vista relating to security are improvements to group policy. A basic understanding of group policy and domains will help understand the key improvements in Windows Vista. In today's session, we will review the key areas of improvement of networking components that make Windows Vista more secure. We'll talk about the new Internet Protocol Stack and the Windows Filter Platform. Then, we will cover how to control network traffic by filtering and firewall rules. We'll take a look at the new Windows Firewall in our demonstration and see some of the new filtering rules that can help prevent unwanted traffic. Finally, we will examine new features in Windows Vista that simplify securing network connections. We will discuss the improvements to Internet Protocol Security IPsec support. We'll learn how to isolate a server in our demonstration and see the changes to group policy that make securing the network more manageable. Let's start by reviewing the network improvements. The Windows Vista network security vision is to make the network disappear and to move the security where the decisions can best be made, at the host, in the applications, and in the data. The Internet is the network now. Today we'll talk about changes in Windows Vista, in the firewall, and in IPsec that can help realize this vision. Group policy defines how the network is divided into public and private zones. Access is controlled by user and computer policy, by the health of the computer, and by authentication. Traffic should be managed in as many places as possible. Domain isolation is part of this. Network access protection makes it even better. It requires strong forms of protecting traffic, limiting what can come into or go out of a computer, as well as authenticating connections. We may want trusted computers to be able to access each other, to get resources on isolated servers, and access the Internet. However, we don't want untrusted computers or users to access protected computers or data. When a new computer is added to the trusted domain, there needs to be a way to provision it securely and easily. It needs to be seamless for the user and easy for administrators to manage. And when users take work home or on the road, there needs to be a secure way for them to access the network from their personal laptop or mobile device. These are the scenarios that the new Windows Firewall and Internet Protocol Security, IPsec, enable. They help block traffic and help control what comes in and goes out. They help authenticate connections between computers, and now, in Windows Vista and Longhorn Server, between people as well. Today we'll talk about changes in Windows Vista, in the firewall, and in IPsec that can help realize this vision. The new security features are based on the Windows filtering platform. This is a replacement for the separate IPsec and firewall components that exist in Windows XP. It provides all the new security features and allows applications to hook into the platform. It is essentially a series of APIs. All are fully documented and supported. Applications no longer need to build their own custom logic for filtering, and they should continue to work after security updates and service packs. Here's what the architecture looks like. The Windows filtering platform is built on the new next-generation TCP/IP protocol stack. Within the Vista API, there are filtering APIs that a third-party firewall or other application that performs packet filtering or processing can use to create filters within the base filtering engine. An example of a WFP application is the new Windows Firewall, which replaces the Internet Connection Firewall in Windows XP prior to Service Pack 2, SP2, and the Windows Firewall in Windows XP SP2 and later. The base filtering engine user mode component implements the filter requests made by filtering applications by plumbing filters into the generic filter engine. The generic filter engine kernel mode component within the new TCP/IP protocol stack stores the filters created by filtering applications via the base filtering engine and interacts with the various layers of the new TCP/IP stack and a set of installed callout drivers. For example, as a packet is being processed up the new TCP/IP stack, each layer encountered contacts the generic filter engine to see whether the packet is to be permitted or dropped. The generic filter engine checks the configured filters and the installed callout modules to verify whether the packet is permitted or should be dropped. Callout modules are used when just filtering the packet, checking the packet against filtering criteria to see whether the packet should be permitted or dropped, is not enough. Callout modules are needed when you need to perform deep inspection of packet contents or data modification. An example is antivirus software, which must inspect application layer data to ensure that no viruses or worms are present in the incoming data stream. Let's see how Windows Vista lets you take advantage of filtering. We've talked about the new filtering platform. Now let's see how we can use it to control traffic. You control traffic with a firewall. This is a modification of how the firewall controlled traffic in Windows XP Service Pack 2. By default, most inbound traffic is still blocked. There are now a few built-in exceptions, such as file and printer sharing, remote desktop, and remote assistance. They are not enabled by default, but they are already defined. We will see how to enable them shortly. You write rules to allow programs and services to listen on ports and to allow users and computers to make inbound connections on protocols and ports. So what about outbound control? All interactive outbound traffic is allowed by default. Services are restricted by default. This is how a service is limited to function. For example, RPC is defined to only use 135 and the 5 ports that have been named. Then the firewall restricts RPC from using anything else. For outbound traffic, you can also write specific rules to block programs and services. You can block users and computers. You can block protocols and ports. We will talk more about outbound filtering a little bit later. Let's compare Windows XP Service Pack 2 with Windows Vista. There are many differences between the firewall in Windows XP Service Pack 2 and Windows Vista. A few main things to note. Windows Vista now supports both inbound and outbound traffic rules. There is an advanced NetShell command line interface to control the firewall and a new MMC interface. We will look at that later in the presentation. You can now remotely manage the firewall via RPC. Also note the new terminology. What used to be called exceptions are now rules, and network profiles are now called network categories. Let's take a look at the key architectural improvements. All calls are now synchronous. Methods are called in a synchronous fashion where the call does not return until the results, the output or return value, of the call are available. In Windows XP, the calls are asynchronous. An asynchronous method call returns prior to the results, and then sometime later a callback method is called to return the actual results. This means that under Windows Vista, a rule is guaranteed to be applied if a call is successful. User context is now added to the firewall. Even though policy is still defined at the computer level, there is an awareness of who is doing what. This applies to firewall rules and IPsec and network connection rules. That ability gives the ability to audit changes to the firewall in the context of the user. Windows service hardening helps prevent critical Windows services from being used for potentially malicious activity in the file system, registry, or network. If the firewall detects abnormal behavior as defined by the Windows Service Hardening Network rules, the firewall will block it. In addition, services can be limited to writing only to specific areas of the file system or registry based on access control lists, ACLs. This will help prevent a compromised service from changing important configuration settings in the file system or registry, or infecting other computers on the network. For example, the remote procedure call, RPC service, can be restricted from replacing system files or modifying the registry. In Windows Vista, the new network location awareness provides the flexibility to ensure that group policy is properly applied in different situations. In previous versions of Windows, Windows processes group policy for the computer policies when the Windows operating system starts, and user policies are processed when a user logs on. Both computer and user policies are refreshed periodically. Windows Vista processes group policy as well for computer and users policies when a computer establishes a virtual private network VPN connection with a remote site and when computer comes out of hibernation or standby. The additional circumstances help to ensure that computers obtain the most recent group policy settings more frequently and whenever the computer changes connections. How do we configure the firewall? There are three interfaces for configuring the Windows firewall. You can configure the new Windows firewall with the Windows Firewall item and control panel, which displays the same set of configuration options as for the Windows XP Service Pack 2 Windows firewall. You can configure basic settings for the new Windows firewall, but you cannot configure enhanced features. Because of the number of advanced configuration options, and the value of having the same GUI for both local and Active Directory group policy-based configurations, the new Windows Firewall can also be configured with an MMC snap-in named Windows Firewall with Advanced Security, which is available in the Administrative Tools folder. With the new Windows Firewall with Advanced Security snap-in, network administrators can configure settings for the new Windows Firewall on remote computers, which is not possible for the current Windows firewall without a remote desktop connection. For command line configuration of advanced settings of the new Windows firewall, you can use commands in the NetShell Advanced Firewall context. This context does not exist for computers running Windows XP with SP2 or Windows Server 2003 with SP1. There are a lot more choices now for configuring firewall rules and exceptions. For rules that specify that incoming or outgoing traffic must be restricted by account, you can specify the list of computer accounts and groups or user accounts and groups that are authorized to initiate protected communication. For example, you can specify that traffic to specific servers with sensitive data must be protected and can only originate from specific users or computers. With the current Windows firewall, you can specify the scope of accepted incoming traffic. The scope defines the portion of the network from which the accepted traffic is allowed to originate, essentially the source IP addresses of incoming traffic. With the new Windows firewall, you can configure both source and destination IP addresses for both incoming and outgoing traffic, allowing you to more closely define the type of traffic that is allowed or blocked. For example, if a computer with a specific IP address is not allowed to originate traffic to a set of servers, you can create a blocking outbound rule specifying the locally assigned address as the source address and the addresses of the servers as the destination addresses. In the current Windows Firewall, you can create rules based on TCP or UDP traffic, but you cannot specify other types of traffic that does not use TCP or UDP. The new Windows Firewall allows you to either select the protocol by name or manually type the value of the IPv4 protocol or IPv6 next header fields for the desired traffic. With the current Windows Firewall, you can specify the destination TCP or UDP port for incoming traffic. With the new Windows Firewall, you can configure both source and destination TCP or UDP ports for both incoming and outgoing traffic, allowing you to more closely define the type of TCP or UDP traffic that is allowed or blocked. For example, if you want to block malicious or undesirable traffic that uses a well-known set of TCP ports, you can create blocking outbound and inbound rules specifying the TCP source and destination ports of the traffic. When configuring a port-based rule with the current Windows Firewall, you can only specify a single TCP or UDP port. With the new Windows Firewall, you can also specify all TCP or UDP ports for all TCP or all UDP traffic, or a common delimited list of multiple ports. To configure the new Windows Firewall for a range of ports, you must specify all of the ports in the range. Rules can also be based on the type of connection that a computer has to the network. With the current Windows Firewall, all the enabled rules apply to all the interfaces on which firewalling is enabled. With the new Windows Firewall, you can specify that a rule applies to all interfaces or to specific types of interfaces, which include LAN, remote access, or wireless interfaces. For example, if an application is only used over remote access connections, and you do not want the rule to be active for LAN and wireless connections, you can configure the rule to apply only to remote access connections. Services can be restricted to particular ports. With the current Windows Firewall, you must configure a rule for a service by specifying the path to the service program file name. With the new Windows Firewall, you can specify that the rule applies to any process, only for services, for a specific service by its service name, or you can type the short name for the service. For example, if you wanted to configure a rule to apply only to the computer browser service, you can select the computer browser service in the list of services running on the computer. There is a feature called Network Location Awareness, which has been improved in Windows Vista. Windows Vista identifies and remembers each of the networks to which it connects. Network Location Awareness identifies the characteristics of a network, such as the default gateway, IP address range, and the interface used to connect. Each network is assigned a category in Windows Vista that identifies the type of network it is. Some of Windows Vista settings will change based upon the categories of the networks to which it is connected. For example, Windows Firewall with Advanced Security enforces different policies based upon the categories of the networks to which Windows Vista is currently connected. There are three categories of networks in Windows Vista. Windows Vista automatically identifies networks on which Windows Vista can authenticate access to the domain controller for the domain to which the computer is joined in this category. No other networks can be placed in this category. A network will only be categorized as private if a user or application identifies the network as private. Only networks located behind a private gateway device should be identified as private networks. Users will likely want to identify home or small business networks as private. Other than domain networks, all networks are automatically categorized as public. Networks that represent direct connections to the Internet or are in public places, such as airports and coffee shops, should be left public. When a user connects to a network that is not part of the domain category, Windows Vista asks the user to identify the network as either public or private. The user must be a local administrator of the computer to identify the network as private. When the type of network to which the computer is connected is identified, Windows Vista is able to optimize some of its configuration, especially its firewall configuration, for the specified network category. What happens if there are multiple network connections on one computer? What if the computer has a wired connection and a wireless connection? How does network location awareness decide which category to use? First, it examines all of the network connections. Are any of the connections public? If so, it will set the category as public. If none of them are public, it will check to see if any are private. If any are private, then the category will be set to private. If none of them are private, it will then check to see if all of the interfaces have been authenticated by a domain controller. If all of the interfaces are authenticated by a domain controller, then the category will be set to domain. Otherwise, the category will be set to public. This means that if, for example, a computer is connected to the domain with a wired connection, but is also connected to an unprotected wireless network, the category will be set to public. There are multiple places where firewall rules are stored. There are four places where rules are stored. Rules can be stored in a group policy object on the domain controller. The group policy can be accessed through the Group Policy Management Center, GPMS. There is the resulting set of policies from applying the site, domain, and organizational unit policies for the computer and user account. The cumulative result of the priority application of group policy is known as the effective policy or resultant set of policy, RSOP. The RSOP can be seen by using the Group Policy Management Center, GPMC. There is a local registry hive for local policy. This is where changes made locally, such as through control panel, are stored. Finally, the dynamic store is the combination of all of the above that is currently being enforced by the firewall. It can be read, but not modified directly. Policies can be exported and imported through the MMC interface or via the command line interface. The rules are evaluated in order from most specific to least specific. The first matching rule that applies is used and the rest are not processed. Rules are evaluated starting with service restrictions. This type of rule restricts services from establishing connections. Service restrictions are configured out of the box so that Windows services can only communicate in specific ways, i.e., restricting allowable traffic through a specific port. But until you create a firewall rule, traffic is not allowed. Then connection rules are applied. This type of rule defines how and when computers authenticate using IPsec. Connection security rules are used in establishing server and domain isolation, as well as in enforcing NAT policy. Then there are certain cases where authenticated computers are allowed to bypass other rules. This type of rule allows the connection of particular computers if the traffic is protected with IPsec, regardless of other inbound rules in place. Specified computers are allowed to bypass inbound rules that block traffic. For example, you could allow remote firewall administration from only certain computers by creating authenticated bypass rules for those computers, or enable support for remote assistance by the help desk. Then block rules are evaluated. This type of rule explicitly blocks a particular type of incoming or outgoing traffic. Next, allow rules are evaluated. This type of rule explicitly allows a particular type of incoming or outgoing traffic. Finally, the default behavior rules for a connection are applied. These rules define the action that takes place when a connection does not meet any of the parameters of a higher order rule. Out of the box, the inbound default is to block connections, and the outbound default is to allow connections. This ordering of rules is always enforced, even when rules are coming from group policy. Rules, including those from group policy, are sorted and then applied. Domain administrators can allow or deny local administrators the permission to create new rules. When is group policy applied? As we referred to earlier in Windows XP, the computer policy is applied once when the computer boots. The user policy is applied once when a user logs on. If specified, there were periodic refreshes. Now in Windows Vista, group policy for both computer policy and user policy is applied also when a VPN connection is established and when the computer resumes from hibernation or standby. These are the common instances when a change of network most likely takes place. When the network changes, new rules based on the new network policy, either specified locally or by the group policy enforced by the new network domain policy, are applied in the correct order. Let's take a look at firewall rules in Windows Vista. In this demonstration, we will see how to monitor firewall rules in Windows Vista. You can configure advanced settings for the new Windows Firewall by accessing the Windows Firewall and Advanced Security Snap-in from the Administrator Tools container in Control Panel. With the Windows Firewall and Advanced Security Snap-in, you can configure inbound and outbound rules and computer connection security. In addition, there are monitoring capabilities within this console. The Windows Firewall with Advanced Security Snap-in has three panes available for configuration and resources. The Overview pane displays the current state of the new Windows Firewall for each profile, including which profile is active. There is also a Getting Started pane, which provides you with basic information about the functions of the new Windows Firewall and provides links to nodes in the console tree. Finally, there is a section that provides links to additional information about common procedures and topics for the new Windows Firewall. When you select an option in either the console tree or the details pane, the corresponding menu options will be displayed in the actions pane. This provides an alternative to right-clicking an item. To modify the new Windows Firewall state or specify additional settings that control the new Windows Firewall behavior, logging settings, and IPsec settings for each profile, we can open the properties of Windows Firewall with Advanced Security. Windows Firewall runs with three network profiles, domain, private, and public. The private profile is applied when the computer is connected to a network in which the computer's domain account does not reside, such as a public network like the Internet. The private profile settings are typically more restrictive than the domain profile because the private profile settings do not need to include applications and services that are only used in a managed domain environment. The public profile is applied when a computer is connected to a domain, using a VPC connection, or to a network in which the computer's domain account does not reside, such as a public network like the Internet. The public profile settings are the most restrictive because the computer is connected to a public network where the security cannot be as tightly controlled as within an IT environment. The domain profile settings are applied when a computer is connected to a network in which the computer's domain account resides. We'll start by specifying IPsec properties for all profiles. You can go with the default settings, or you can customize the settings to your company's needs. We can choose any of the available key exchange methods. The Edit Advanced Key Exchange Settings dialog box displays options for encryption algorithm choices, key exchange algorithm choices, and integrity algorithm choices. The default encryption algorithm is AES-128, which was one of the new algorithms that Windows Vista supports. In addition, you have the option of selecting AES-192 or AES-256, the other two new algorithms. You can also select the key exchange algorithm you want to use. By default, DH Group 2 is selected. This method is stronger than DHgroup 1, and is compatible with previous versions of Windows. You also have the option of selecting one of the new key exchange algorithms included with Windows Vista. We are going to select the ECDH P256, which is a stronger algorithm than the default that can only be used with Windows Vista or Windows Server Longhorn operating systems. You can also configure data protection settings for IPsec. For protocol types, you can select ESP or AH. ESP is the recommended protocol because it is compatible with network address translations. Algorithm types are SHA-1 or MD5. While SHA-1 is stronger than MD5, it uses up more resources. We can also specify the amount of time, either in minutes or megabytes, before a key is regenerated. When you select an integrity suite, you must also select an encryption suite. We'll keep the default setting for the encryption suite. Finally, you can select the authentication method for IPsec. You can select a computer, a user, or a combination of the two. You can also choose a computer certificate from a certificate authority you specify. Now we are going to show how to create firewall rules. We can create rules for both inbound and outbound traffic. Windows Firewall will examine all incoming traffic against the rules we create and allow the traffic we specify. To create an inbound rule, right-click Inbound Rules in the tree and then click New Rule. Alternately, we can click Inbound Rules in the tree and then click New Rule in the Actions pane. You can specify rules based on several conditions. First, you can create a rule for incoming traffic based on a program name. Next, you can specify a rule for incoming traffic based on TCP or UDP ports. When creating a rule for a port, you must specify an action, the profile to which the rule applies, and a name for the rule. There are several predefined rules that you can also specify. Finally, you can create a custom rule, which is a rule that does not specify a program, port, or predefined service. You would select this option when you want to manually configure rule behavior, perhaps based on advanced settings that cannot be configured through the pages of the new inbound rule wizard. Predefined rules include remote assistance, file and printer sharing, remote desktop, universal plug-and-play framework, and ICMP echo request. We will create a rule for remote assistance from the predefined list. Since we've chosen a predefined rule type, we'll be presented with a number of predefined rule settings. For remote desktop, there is only one rule available, but the other rule types, for example, remote service administration, will have several predefined rules to choose from. Now we'll configure the behavior of the firewall when network communication matches the firewall rule. We can allow, block, or allow with limitations. For our organization, we'll allow connections through the remote desktop, but we want to secure the communication by requiring encryption. Note that the security level configured on this page specifies the minimum allowed for the connection. The Users and Computers page configures those users or computers from which communications are allowed to originate. The firewall requires authentication from either the user or computer in order to allow the traffic. By default, these options are not limited, so all users and computers will be allowed. After the new inbound rule wizard has completed, there is a new inbound rule with the name you specified in the Details pane. You can configure advanced properties for the rule in the Rules properties. Instead of creating an inbound rule for one of the predefined rules, you can just enable the rule listed in the Details pane. So we can locate the rule for remote assistance and choose to enable the rule. If we wanted to make changes to the default configured rule, we could open the Rules properties. Windows Firewall with Windows Vista allows you to configure outbound rules in addition to inbound rules. Creating an outbound rule is essentially the same as creating a rule for inbound traffic. Once the new outbound rule wizard starts, you have the option to create a rule for a program or port. You can use a predefined rule, or you can create a custom rule. These options are the same as for the new inbound rule wizard. For the outbound rule, we are going to create a rule based on a program. We need to specify the location of the program we want to create the rule for. We are going to specify Internet Explorer as the program we will allow outbound traffic from. We can allow secure connections, insecure connections, or both. Next, we need to specify the profile to which the rule applies. If we select domain, it will apply when a computer is connected to the corporate domain. We'll configure this rule to only apply to the domain profile. We'll name this rule Internet Explorer. After the new outbound rule wizard has completed, there is a new outbound rule with the name you specified in the Details pane. To configure advanced properties for the rule, we can open its properties. From the Properties dialog box for either an inbound or an outbound rule, you can configure the rule's settings. On the General tab, you can change the rule's name, the program to which the rule applies, and the rule's action. The actions a rule can take are to allow, block, or protect. When a rule protects the traffic, it will only allow secure connections. You can also specify to require encryption. We can change the rule's IP protocol, source, and destination TCP or UDP ports, as well as ICMP or ICMPv6 settings. On the Scope tab, you can change the rule's source and destination addresses for local and remote addresses. On the Programs and Services tab, You can change programs this applies to and specify services to which the rule applies. The Advanced tab allows you to specify the profiles, types of interfaces, and services to which the rule applies. Another type of rule is a computer connection security rule. Computer connection security outlines how and when secure communications are established between computers or groups of computers. Once the new authentication rule wizard starts, you can choose what type of authentication rule you want to create. Use an isolation rule when you want to specify that computers are to be isolated from other computers based on membership in a common Active Directory infrastructure or because they have an updated and current health status. Isolating computers based on their health status uses the new Network Access Protection, or NAP, platform in Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn. NAP is a system health policy enforcement platform built into Windows Vista that allows you to better protect private network assets by enforcing compliance with system health requirements. With NAP, you can create customized health policies to validate computer health before allowing access or communication, automatically update compliant computers to ensure ongoing compliance, and optionally limit the access of non-compliant computers to a restricted network until they become compliant. You can use the authentication exception rule type to exempt specific computers or a group or range of IP addresses, computers, from being required to authenticate themselves, regardless of other connection security rules. This rule type is commonly used to grant access to infrastructure computers that this computer must communicate with before authentication can be performed. It is also used for other computers that cannot use the form of authentication you configured for this policy and profile. Infrastructure computers, such as Active Directory domain controllers, Certification Authorities, CAs, or DHCP servers might be allowed to communicate with this computer before authentication can be performed. To create an authentication exemption rule, you need only specify the computers, or group or range of IP addresses, and give the rule a name and description, optional. Use the server-to-server rule type to authenticate the communications between two specific computers, between two groups of computers, between two subnets, or between a specific computer and a group of computers or a subnet. You might use this rule to authenticate the traffic between a database server and a business layer computer, or between an infrastructure computer and another server. Use the tunnel rule to secure communications traveling between two peer computers through tunnel endpoints, such as virtual private networking, VPN, or IPsec Layer 2 tunneling protocol, L2TP tunnels. Finally, you can create a custom rule when you want to manually configure a rule, perhaps based on advanced properties that cannot be configured through the pages of the new authentication rule wizard. Let's configure an authentication rule for server-to-server communication. You can choose all computers or specify specific computer IP addresses for the endpoints. We are going to choose specific computers as the endpoints. First, we type the IP address for the workstation we are on now. Now we need to add the other endpoint. We are going to enter the IP address of our domain controller, which is 192.168.16.1. By selecting to request authentication for inbound and outbound connections, authentication will be used when possible, but if authentication fails, the connection will still be allowed. You can also choose to only require authentication for inbound traffic or for both inbound and outbound traffic. We are going to have the computers authenticate through certificates, so we need to select a certification authority. Normally, you would have a certificate authority within your domain, which you would select. However, for this demonstration, we will select the Microsoft Root Certificate Authority. At this step, you could also choose to only accept health certificates created through the NAP server. Next, we need to select the profile to which this rule will apply. We'll name this rule Server Authentication. You can modify the settings for the computer connection rule, as with the other type of rules, through the Properties dialog box. We've talked about controlling network traffic with Windows Firewall. Now let's discuss how to secure connections using IPsec and domain isolation. You can use group policy to define the segments of the network that are to be isolated. First, define the logical isolation boundaries. Servers and workstations with sensitive data should be at the most protected level. The rest of the domain is defined to encapsulate the managed computers. Then use Active Directory to distribute the policies and credentials to all of the managed machines. Now all of the managed computers can communicate with each other. But inbound connections from untrusted computers are blocked. And within the managed domain, only computers and users with authorization can get to sensitive data. Windows Vista and Longhorn Server make it easy to isolate resources. In this demonstration, we'll use a wizard to isolate a computer. For example, you can isolate a server in your domain from computers outside your domain, such as computers on the internet or another domain. You may have sensitive data, such as employee personal information, stored on a server in the human resources domain. Using isolation, you can prevent computers or users that do not belong to the human resources organization from reaching the computer. Configuring IPsec policies in Windows Server 2003 and Windows XP has not been a particularly easy and efficient process. The experience began with right-clicking IP security policies and following the wizard to create an IP security policy. On average, it would take you about 100 mouse clicks using these wizards to create the policy for the domain isolation scenario. One of the reasons for this is that when we originally designed the interface for the IPsec Policy Manager, we exposed everything to you, the administrator. We gave you access to every single option and tool without wrapping them around scenarios. We avoid this in Windows Vista. In the Windows Firewall with Advanced Security MMC Snap-in, we've combined the management of both the Windows Firewall and IPsec into a single interface. This avoids the confusion around when to use IP filters and determining how to take advantage of a secure connection while ensuring only secure traffic is allowed in and out of the computer. The best part of this is that we've taken the old IPsec configuration interface and introduced a new wizard-based approach designed around scenarios. From the beginning, you'll notice this is a better and easier way to create a policy. We start with four options for creating a new policy with a fifth custom rule option. An isolation rule restricts the connections based on authentication criteria that you define. For example, you can use this rule type to isolate computers in your domain from computers outside your domain, such as computers on the internet or another domain. Instead of trying to decide on filter actions or what filters to use, the first step in creating the isolation rule wizard is deciding what authentication you want to use. The classic domain isolation policy is to require that whenever someone wants to talk to me, they have to negotiate IPsec. If I want to talk to another computer, I'll request IPsec, but not require it. The next step for creating the communication policy is to determine what type of authentication we want to use. In earlier versions of Windows, you were basically limited to what machine-level credentials. One of the new features within Windows Vista and networking is that we can now authenticate on user and health. Health is where network access protection comes in. We can decide when this rule is in place based on network profiles. Since this is a domain isolation policy, we'll just enable it when the domain controller can be reached on the local network. We'll give the policy a name. Now we've completed the configuration of an IPsec policy in less than 10 clicks. Once we've created the IPsec policy, we can view the properties to make any necessary adjustment to the settings. For example, we can specify that this policy is in place between specific endpoints on the network. Or we can change the authentication method. We can also specify the interface this rule applies to. You may want to create a specific rule that requires authentication when using only your wireless network connection. Let's take a look at simplified policy. Let's say I have a client workstation computer that has been configured with IPsec policy. I have two servers. One with no IPsec policy, and one that is configured with IPsec policy. So what happens? Because my simplified IPsec policy simply says use IPsec everywhere, if I connect to a server that does not support IPsec, the computer is going to send out a clear text connection and an IPsec negotiation at the same time. Because the client computer doesn't know yet that the server has no IPsec policy, it just sends out both. But the server has no IPsec policy, so it just responds in clear text. Therefore, we have a clear text-only conversation. Notice I didn't need to write an exemption in the policy on the workstation computer. I can simply set IPsec everywhere, and the computer will dynamically adjust, unless I have specifically said that I do not want to allow fallback to clear text in a rule. Now I'll try to connect to a server that does support IPsec. Again, the client doesn't know whether it has IPsec or not. So again, it sends out both clear text and IPsec negotiate. Since the server has IPsec policy, it returns an IPsec negotiation. So the connection is IPsec secured. This makes it a lot easier to deploy domain isolation, since you don't have to define exemptions for resources that don't support IPsec. Here's how IPsec and domain controllers work together. If you configure IPsec on your domain controller and you put it in request mode, then when a member computer joins the domain and whenever it logs on, that communication will be in clear text. After that, subsequent communications will be IPsec secured. So you can now use Kerberos as your authentication method in member to domain controller traffic. If you configure IPsec on the domain controller to require encryption, then upon domain join, or when the machine tries to log on, a dialog box appears asking for the username and password of an account that has permission to join the domain. Of course, subsequent communications will be protected. This configuration will only work on Vista. How does connection negotiation work with load balancing and clustering? When a client tries to negotiate a connection with a group of servers configured for load balancing or clustering, a renegotiation must occur for an alternate node to take the connection. Previous versions of Windows waited until idle time expired before they tried to renegotiate a connection when a node failed. This means that an entire minute went by before the renegotiation started to take place. Not only is the wait frustrating for the user, it can also cause applications to fail waiting on a server response. Now, in Vista and Longhorn, IPsec is continuously monitoring the active security associations. As soon as multiple retries are detected, IPsec will immediately start renegotiating with another node. This translates to less wait times and more stable applications. Let's take a closer look at what happens when a node fails. Imagine we've got an active security association with node 1. Node 1 goes away for some reason. The client keeps trying to talk to node 1. The client detects that it's retransmitting the same traffic over and over, but not getting any response. Therefore, node 1 must be gone. So the client will renegotiate a security association with the cluster IP address, and then get redirected to a particular node, and in this case, establishes a security association with node 2. This all happens now in about 15 seconds, as opposed to taking between 2 and 5 minutes in Windows XP and Server 2003. In addition to faster renegotiation, Windows Vista has improved authentication that better supports key scenarios. In extended mode, there are new forms of authentication. With network access protection, you can now require that a computer meets minimum health requirements to connect, such as an approved antivirus client with current virus definitions. With IPsec enforcement, you must have a health certificate server. Clients are quarantined until they meet health requirements. The health certificate server issues X.509 certificates to quarantine clients when they are determined to be compliant. These certificates are then used to authenticate NAP clients when they initiate IPsec secure communications with other NAP clients on an intranet. You can have multiple authentication methods enabled. You can add user authentication. You can use Kerberos and NTLM V2 for both users and computers. Also, unlike IPsec in previous versions, if you choose multiple authentication methods, it will follow them. It will not give up and fail after trying the first method. It will continue down the list and then try them in the order that they are defined. Here's a little more about how the stack actually chooses the authentication and cryptographic sets. When a security association begins establishing itself, there is one phase one security association between any two peers. There is never more than just one. So the connection security rule specifies a custom authentication if there is one. If there is nothing specified, then it will use a default authentication set, which happens to be Kerberos. For encryption, it will simply follow whatever is defined globally. So at phase one, remember, you have the per rule settings and the global settings. When you are defining the phase one security association as a rule, the choices are only for authentication. For encryption, it will follow whatever is defined globally. Now, for phase two, the security encryption is a little bit different. Notice that there is at least one per security association, and there can be multiples that vary by TCP or UDP port. So my machine could be connected to a web server in one session and a telnet server in another. When I connect, I get one main mode that uses my global settings. And for the web server, I can define a quick mode that uses a custom cryptography set. If I didn't define a custom, it would follow a default cryptography set. I could also define a custom authentication if I wanted to, and then I would have another quick mode definition for when I connect to the telnet port. I might want to use a different form of authentication. There is more flexibility here now. Let's take a look at how connection rules respond. When you are choosing rule actions in the new connection wizard, you can choose the secure communication option. In this scenario, an inbound rule will reject if IPsec fails. On an outbound rule, it will reject if IPsec fails. There is the notion of a secure server. On a secure server, if you set this up and the incoming connection does not have IPsec, the server will reject it. but the server will negotiate an outbound connection and fall back to clear if it can't make the IPsec association. There is one defined as DMZ. DMZ will negotiate inbound and outbound directions. It will fall back to clear on either if it can't secure an IPsec connection. Or there is the choice of do not secure, which will proceed in clear on inbound and outbound connections. Here's a little more about connection rules. A little more about rules. How are they ordered? The ordering is the same as in previous versions of Windows. They are ordered by specificity, not by how they appear in the interface. So let's say I have a rule that says IPsec everywhere to all destinations, and then I've got a rule that says clear text to 1234 on port 75. Well, that's more specific. So if I'm connecting to server 1234, I will use the more specific rule first. If evaluated between rules with the same specificity, it will then evaluate authenticated bypass rules. Remember the example where the help desk is allowed to bypass the block and allow rules for remote assistance. Then block rules with specifically block authentication will be processed. Finally, rules which allow authentication will be processed. Windows Server Longhorn and Windows Vista include new IPsec audit specific events, and the text of existing events has been updated with more useful information. These improvements will help you troubleshoot failed IPsec negotiations without having to enable the advanced Oakley logging capability. Windows Server Longhorn and Windows Vista also include IPsec performance counters to help identify performance and networking issues with IPsec protected traffic. The Network Diagnostics Framework is an extensible architecture that helps users recover from and troubleshoot problems with network connections. For a failed IPsec negotiation, the Network Diagnostics Framework will prompt a user with an option to identify and correct the problem. IPsec support for the Network Diagnostics Framework then attempts to discover the source of the failed connection and either automatically correct the problem or, depending on security considerations, prompt the user to make the appropriate configuration change. Let's take a look at what the auditing looks like. In this demonstration, we will look at the new IPsec auditing features and diagnostics. Windows Firewall with Advanced Security includes built-in tools for monitoring firewall rules, computer connection security rules, and security associations. Note that the monitoring node is not available from the group policy snap-in. You can only access it through the Windows Firewall with Advanced Security console. Use the Firewall folder to monitor all active-enabled rules, including rules for the active profile and rules distributed via group policy. This folder lists all of the enabled connection security rules with detailed information about their settings. Remember, connection security rules use Internet Protocol Security, IPsec, to secure communication between this computer and other computers. Connection security rules define which authentication, key exchange, data integrity, or encryption can be used to form a security association, SA. An SA defines the security used to protect the communication from sender to receiver. This folder lists all of the security associations, SAs, with detailed information about their settings and endpoints. This folder lists all of the main mode SAs with detailed information about their settings and endpoints. You can use these folders to view the IP addresses of the endpoints. Like the main mode folder, this folder lists all of the quick mode SAs. If there was an active connection taking place, these folders are where you could monitor the security association in real time and look for any problems. We can also take a look at the security events for this computer in Event Viewer. Here we can view a summary of administrative events. But what if I'm only interested in IPsec events? I can create a custom view to display only the events I want to see. In this case, I want to view by source. I only want to see events created by IPsec. Now I can give my new view a name and description. If there were any recent IPsec events on this computer, they would be listed here. In the Action pane, you will find several commands that can be applied to the current view, such as deleting, renaming, or refreshing the current view. Let's take a look at another event. Information about events is clearly displayed in the new Event Viewer. Events now include additional information, such as keywords, that allow for better queries and filtering of events. Furthermore, help documentation is available in Windows Vista for all events, explaining what the event means and what to do when it occurs. Events are generated in XML. These schematized events are dramatically easier to manipulate and manage than the text-based events they replace. XML events can also be more easily consumed by management tools, which may make it easier to manage desktops in the enterprise. Other options regarding specific events appear in the Action pane when you select an event. You can view the details, attach a task to the event, copy the event to the clipboard, or even save the event to a file. Many times, administrators need to view specific information from several logs. Windows Vista introduces cross-log queries to create views based upon multiple logs to give system administrators the ability to get the information they need quickly. We want to view information from both the system and the Windows logs. To view both log information in a cross-log query, we will start by creating a new view based on the system log. The drop-down list provides a new interface from which you can select the folders you want to include in the view. Since we started from the system log, it is automatically included. Now let's add all the Windows events to our view. You can find the Windows event logs under the Microsoft subheading in the Applications Log directory. Setting up the cross-query log is similar to creating a filter in that we can include only the relevant information. In this case, we'll include critical, warning, and error events in this view. Events can be filtered based on the event IDs. Events can also be filtered and arranged for specific events or even excluded. Once we save the view, it is located under Views in the console tree. This simplifies the process because we don't have to recreate the query each time we need to access the information. For this event, the source log file is the Microsoft Windows Diagnosis DPS operational log. This event was generated from a different event source. Thus, we now have a view that is a cross-log query. Today, we've seen how Windows Vista Networking has been rebuilt to provide greater security. Windows Vista includes a new implementation of the TCP/IP protocol suite, known as the Next Generation TCP/IP Stack. The new stack allows tight integration with the Windows Firewall and the latest security standards. We've learned about how these innovations help secure the network by enabling new features to filter network traffic using Windows Firewall, which is based on the Windows filtering platform. We've learned about network location awareness, which detects and identifies networks so that different rules can be applied depending on where a computer is connected. We've also learned about securing connections with Internet Protocol Security, IPsec. We've seen the new management features in group policy and enhanced command line interface tools that give greater control over connections, and we've taken a look at the new diagnostics and auditing that will save time and money. To get more information on the products and technologies we have covered today, we have some online resources available that can help. For the most comprehensive technical information on Microsoft products, visit the main TechNet website at www.microsoft.com/TechNet. Additionally, visit www.microsoft.com/TechNet/DSK-13 for more information on books, courses, certifications, and other community resources that related directly to this particular session. There are a number of other resources that are available from Microsoft. Popular author and MVP William Stanek offers expert insights in this first look into the latest generation of Windows operating systems. Discover the new features and tools for deploying Windows Vista, help secure PCs and user accounts, migrate user settings and data, manage application compatibility, improve reliability, reduce support costs, develop applications, and help users achieve new levels of productivity and success at home or on the job. Introducing Microsoft Windows Vista is the guided preview for IT professionals, business decision makers, early adopters, users, developers, and anyone else who wants to start planning and hit the ground running with Windows Vista. There is also another good book available from another publisher. Here is the ultimate one-stop desk reference for Windows Vista users. Windows Vista, the complete reference, provides comprehensive coverage of the newest features of the operating system. From setting up for optimum performance and understanding the operating system to finding files and keeping computer systems secure and free from spyware, this volume covers it all. It's the ideal resource for anyone who wants to truly master Windows Vista. There is also an assessment program available that can help you test your knowledge. Microsoft Skills Assessment is a free online learning tool. It's an easy way for IT professionals to check their skills. You can quickly check your skills in implementing or managing Microsoft products or business solutions. Just take a short 30-question assessment and see how well you know your stuff. The Skills Assessment includes a personalized learning plan, which includes links to Microsoft official curriculum, specific technical articles, Microsoft Pressbooks, and other Microsoft Learning content. There's also a way to measure how well you did compared with others who took the same assessment. Microsoft Skills Assessment is an expanding learning platform. Available now are assessments for Windows Server 2003, including security and patch management, Exchange Server 2003, Windows Storage Server, Office 2003, and VisualStudio.net. If you want to take your skills assessment to the next level, a number of certification programs are available. In the highly competitive IT job market, how can you set yourself apart from the next candidate? The Microsoft Certification Program provides that edge. Earning a specific accreditation provides objective validation of the ability to successfully perform critical IT functions. Embraced by industry professionals worldwide, Microsoft certification remains one of the most effective ways to reach long-term career goals and is a surefire way for companies to develop and retain valuable IT staff. Several accreditations are available. starting with the basic Microsoft Certified Professional, MCP, you can become a fully certified System Administrator, MCSA, System Engineer, MCSE, or a Desktop Specialist, MCDST. Away from the infrastructure side, the MCDBA certification covers the SQL Server products. For more information about the certification program, visit www.microsoft.com/learning/MCP. This session was brought to you by TechNet. TechNet has gone through some changes recently, which you might find interesting. To help explain this in more detail, I'd like to introduce Ian Brackenberry, TechNet Subscriptions Product Manager, to cover these changes in more detail.
TechNet Plus Subscription introduces its newest offering, TechNet Plus Direct. With TechNet Plus Direct, subscribers get all of the benefits of TechNet Plus for 30% less. Subscribers receive fast, easy access to the tools and information they need to get the most out of Microsoft solutions. A subscription provides IT professionals with immediate online access to all the essential technical resources they need to resolve technical issues faster, get hands-on experience with the latest Microsoft technologies, and build technical skills. Subscribers now get immediate access to all their subscription features in one convenient location, our new online benefits portal. Subscribers get access through subscriber download to Microsoft full version software for evaluation and beta releases without time or feature limits. No more waiting for media shipments. This includes Microsoft Server, client, and application software titles. With full version software, subscribers can make informed decisions about new technologies and deployments at their own pace. For the toughest technical questions, a TechNet Plus subscription also comes with two complimentary professional support incidents. Subscribers can talk to a Microsoft support professional to quickly resolve their mission-critical technical issues fast. TechNet Plus also provides access to over 100 managed newsgroups. Subscribers can exchange ideas with other professionals and get expert answers to their technical questions within the next business day, guaranteed. In addition, subscribers can also chat with a Microsoft Search Assistant online for help finding the technical resources they need or for assistance with non-technical questions. Subscribers also get access to technical information and tools, including the TechNet Plus library containing the knowledge base, security updates, service packs, resource kits, and more. TechNet Plus offers proven value that far exceeds its cost. The two complimentary professional support incidents alone more than offset the cost of a TechNet Plus subscription. Add to that the evaluation and beta software and other technical resources, and TechNet Plus clearly boosts productivity. Every IT professional on the team needs one. TechNet Plus is available exclusively online without media shipments. For more information, please visit technet.microsoft.com/subscriptions. There are a number of free community resources available on TechNet. You can attend a regular chat with members of the product groups or technology specialists from Microsoft, or you can attend a webcast where you can see sessions like the one you've just watched, but presented live and with the ability to ask questions as you go. You can also read or post questions in public news groups. The newsgroup page lists the available groups and provides an interface from which you can read and post messages. TechNet Plus subscribers can use these groups to post questions, and through their subscription ID, are guaranteed a response from Microsoft support professionals and IT experts by the next business day. The main community site provides a comprehensive list of resources available, more than we can cover on this slide, and the page has some dynamic features with continually updated content. The events page provides dates and details about attending a live TechNet event. These events take place around the world and provide the opportunity for you to talk to Microsoft specialists face-to-face. And finally, the TechNet columns provide a variety of topics written by industry authors. And with that, thank you for taking the time to listen to this TechNet session.